The Israeli delegation was scheduled to arrive in Cairo yesterday to participate in ceasefire talks. Humanitarian crisis has worsened on the Gaza Strip, meanwhile, with trouble getting aid to the region in a timely fashion. Now, as a global community sounds the alarm, citing humanitarian crisis in the region, we must begin to ask tough questions around the complexity of U.S.-Israel relations, looking at its history and the complexity of the current situation. Now, despite a widening rift between the Biden administration and Benjamin Netanyahu's government, the U.S. did authorize a transfer of bombs and airplanes for Israel. So for further insights, we now connect with Professor Kim Byung-joo of the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies. Good morning, Professor Kim.
Good morning.
Happy Monday, and thank you for joining us.
Happy Monday to you, too.
All right, we're going to take our listeners back just a week. Last week, Monday, the UN Security Council adopted a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in war-ravaged Gaza. Now, having vetoed three times against similar moves before, the U.S. abstained at this time, allowing the measure to pass. So, of course, questions like what motivated such a shift comes into question. Do we see an important shift in the U.S. stance towards Israel?
What we see basically is kind of the world divided between two groups. One is Israel and United States together on this issue of Israel-Palestine-Hamas conflict. On the other hand, the rest of the world opposing the way Israel and the United States are handling the situation here. So in this big picture of division between Israel, U.S. together, and then rest of the world against it, the United States kind of like ran out of what they could bear with this time. And so after vetoing three times mm-hmm. against the United Nations Security Council resolution, this time they abstained from it. And as a result of it, the Netanyahu government was mm-hmm. infuriated, mm-hmm. and they really showed their anger through many different forms of reaction. One that stood out was, this southern city of Rafal mm-hmm. Within Gaza Strip, where more than 1 million people had lived, and now with refugees, we don't exactly know how many people are there. Israel is talking about invading the city of Rafal, and the United States has been standing against it. Mm. And they were going to talk about how Israel, what kind of plan Israel has in terms of invading Rafal, while the United States was trying to dissuade from this attack. And they were going to have a meeting, but as a result of this UNSCR issuing and the United States staying away from it, then meeting fell apart.
Right,
and, Netanyahu came out saying, we're not going to send our delegation to Washington to explain what we are going to do with the city of Rafal. And right. We're going to do whatever is necessary. And that together with his other words of expression of anger really, exploded. And even within inside Israel, there were criticisms raised against Netanyahu's expression of anger, saying he's going too far, he's actually damaging our precious relationship with the United States. Mm. That's what many of the Israeli media was saying. But point being here that, this UNSCR action or inaction on the side of the United States provided a kind of trigger point for a kind of explosion of the disagreements and angers toward each other regarding the Gaza Strip issue between Israel and the United States. And what's even more interesting is that Trump even came out criticizing both sides. Trump is a figure you would not believe that he would act or say anything against Israel.
Right.
Among many things that he has done for pro-Israel, he has son-in-law, Kushner, right. is a Jewish American, and they've been working very hard to strengthen Israel-U.S. ties. He has his family element in it here, but he was this time saying, that Israel has to end the war here, Trump was saying, and, this war is not gaining any support from around the world, and Israel has to stop this war. And or to Biden government. Trump was saying this all happened because of Biden. Biden mishandled the
But
situation.
of course.
And the attack itself, he said, October 7 attack itself happened because of Biden. We don't know exactly what the logic is, but all the responsibility falls on the shoulder of Biden, he was saying. No surprise there. But anyway, so great disagreement between Israel and the United States, and we are seeing this here as a result of the world being divided between the two groups, Israel, United States together, as I mentioned, and the rest of the world being on the other side.
And maybe we'll get to the history of maybe Democrats not just flip-flopping, but readjusting their stance on the Gaza Strip battles, wars before. We'll get to that in just a moment. But it's too simplified to say that a single entity, a single country, can be responsible for all of it, and certainly not just the Biden administration. But I've got to say, I mean, with the important election coming up in November in the United States, that's not really a surprising stance to take.
Makes sense.
Now, despite the recent disagreements between Israel and the United States, would it be fair to say that the U.S. support for Israel ever since the Hamas attack last October has sufficiently demonstrated a special nature of U.S.-Israeli ties backed by the bipartisan support in Washington? I also saw a recent report saying now that despite the widening rift between Biden administration and Benjamin Netanyahu's government, the U.S. also authorized a transfer for bombs and airplanes.
Right, exactly. That's a really important point. And over the recent years, before the October 7th attack, we were kind of being reminded of the difference between Democrats and Republicans, which we will talk about. But overall, this time, as a result of this October 7th attack, we are reminded once again the United States as a whole is strongly pro-Israel, and perhaps the only pro-Israel, significant pro-Israel force among the major powers in the world here. What happened was, we remember 10 day only 10 days after the attack, Biden himself flew to Israel actually, and demonstrating United States' strong support for Israel as a whole. That was a very strong signal of expression of support altogether. And all along, for many years in this program too, I think we have been talking about the presence of Israel in U.S. politics, and one that signified, among many things, APEC, AIPAC, American Israel Public Affairs Committee. In the United States, there are organizations called PAC, Political Action Committee, and this AIPAC APEC is the largest, most powerful PAC in U.S. politics, which means so much money actually flows through APEC. AIPAC into the pockets of U.S. politicians. This pro-Israel money flows from the Jewish Americans to U.S. politicians. And sitting presidents, actually in the past so far, have spoken at APEC conferences. Not only former president, but sitting presidents used to call to APEC, and they would give a speech. This is the single most powerful political organization in U.S. politics. So, as a result of it, for example, establishment, those elites on the top, whether we're talking about Democrats or Republicans, together, all together, they are pro-Israel big time. And I think we talked about this, quite a while ago. But for example, 2008, there was a famous book published by leading, actually Jewish American scholars, Professor John Mersheimer of Chicago University and Stephen Walt of Harvard University. These two Jewish Americans published a book called "Israel Lobby and the U.S. Foreign Policy," criticizing the Israel's influence on U.S. foreign policy, arguing that actually Israel lobby hurts U.S. national interest. Israel lobby is so powerful, it goes against even U.S. national interest. It was quite interesting to see these kind of words coming from, the Jewish American scholars criticizing the power of Israel lobby in U.S. politics. It became a huge deal. As a result of it, we saw some changes in the way opinion was leaning towards and everything among the elites for a while. But then again, it's all back to what it used to be among the elites establishment. And talking about grassroots or just common citizens, especially Trump supporters in the South, in the United States, for example, the evangelists, the faith-based organizations and stuff, no question about it. It's just absolute support for Israel. So we see both elites and the grassroots public, they have strong basis for supporting Israel. So United States as a whole shows this unique stance that's very unique in the world politics, that shows strongly pro-Israel stance.
Maybe we need to take our listeners back in time just a little bit. For example, during his presidency, former President Barack Obama often backed Israel's right to self-defense at the start of conflicts with Hamas, but later called for Israeli restraint once there were too many Palestinian lives lost. I wonder, what do we need to be mindful of in the fact that Democrats have a noted record of disagreement with Israel, particularly during Obama's tenure?
Having talked about the United States as a whole, strongly pro-Israel entity, and now it's really important to be reminded the division inside it, inside of it in the U.S., particularly during Obama's time. We talked about this in this program before, but Obama's time was the time when the United States government was trying to implement what's called the offshore balancing and pivot to Asia, like trying to move away Middle East and let's focus on Asia. That was the stance. And how do we move away from the Middle East? The key Middle Eastern allies, Saudi Arabia, Israel, trying to work things out among them and then let them sort out things. And at the same time, we, the United States, is going to work out our deals with Iran. So as a result of it, we remember like the JCPOA, Joint Action Plan agreement on how Iran is going to deal with their nuclear weapons program issues, an agreement signed by P5, permanent five members of UN Security Council plus Germany and EU. That was announced 2015. So basically, the United States trying to improve relationship with Iran while they're moving slightly away from their key allies, Saudi Arabia and Israel, and letting them work out their relationship together. And that faced a strong, unbelievably strong opposition from then, again, Netanyahu. Netanyahu was prime minister then, 2015. And Netanyahu actually flew to Washington, and he would give a speech to Republican-controlled U.S. Congress, expressing strong criticism against Obama and all these things that being worked out between the United States and Iran, JCPOA, and he was bombasting Obama government altogether. And it was something that we haven't seen, we have never seen in the past. Foreign leader coming to Washington, criticizing White House and giving all these speeches, flying all this criticism against the White House from the Capitol Hill. Using this, partisan politics, taking side with Republicans. So it was a real scene. And Biden, having been a vice president of Obama government, we were expecting certain kind of tendency remaining, and kind of a seed of tension, if you will, right, between Biden government and Netanyahu government. But when this thing broke out, October 7th attack broke out, as we mentioned, Biden had shown strong support. But since then, of course, the world is turning against Israel, humanitarian crisis, unbelievable, the atrocities and stuff. And so Biden government is caught in between the world community's opinion on one hand, and then having to still support Israel because this is American government. So it's a very complicated situation, but we remember this, all these troubles back in Obama's time.
Not to add to the complexity, but I think we absolutely have to touch upon this. Israel's domestic politics also adds to the complexity of the situation. Can we talk a little bit about the political dynamics that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces?
This is people kind of looks like we, many of us might have largely, whether we like it or not, kind of forgotten about what was happening before October 7th last year, right? I mean, with regard to Israel. Before Hamas attack, that's easy to remember. It's hard to recall now after all these things that's happening since October 7th, but we know before Hamas action, we were hearing continuously about this protest on the streets of Israel against Netanyahu. Protest against what? Protest against Netanyahu's efforts go against his judiciary. Netanyahu government right now it's not his party, Likud party only, but it's a form of it's a it has different parties participating in his government, and there are strong elements of extremely conservative political parties, Orthodox Jews and so on, participating in his coalition government there. And this Netanyahu government, what they have tried is try to kind of limit and restrict the Supreme Court, power of Supreme Court, and then power of the what do you call it, a prosecutor general, for instance. Traditionally, Israel has had a very powerful Supreme Court and prosecutor general that could actually act against executive government if executive government introduced certain regulations. And then even legislature, if legislatures introduced certain legislations, they could say, oh, this is unconstitutional, you cannot implement it, they could stop it. And what Netanyahu has been trying before Hamas attack was trying to change their constitution, their laws, in order to limit the power of judiciary. What made this one very controversial is the fact that actually Netanyahu is still on trial. He was accused of corruption and several wrongdoings, right, back in 2019. And he has been on trial, and he still ran for election, and he came back as the prime minister. And since he came back, he's trying all these things against judiciary that has been trying him on the court. So there have been strong reactions and the protest against. So what we know is this Hamas attack actually strengthened the political position for Netanyahu, because he faced these division challenges, but now country had to be united facing this attack. But now, with this hostage issues, Israeli people are very angry about Netanyahu's aggression, kind of further delaying the return of hostages. We were told over this just past weekend, thousands of them were protesting at the parliament and also streets of Israel, criticizing Netanyahu, asking for his resignation, asking for a general election and everything. So what we see basically is all this political challenge Netanyahu faces, and as he faces the challenges, Netanyahu is likely to act more aggressive, aggressive against Palestinians, and then aggressive against the United States, aggressive against Biden government. So this is not good. I mean, Israeli people want political change, and as a result of it, domestic political agenda and interest for Netanyahu is leading him towards more and further of these confrontational directions. This is really not good.
And this is while the global community, maybe besides Israel and the United States, or maybe partially, maybe some Americans have voiced their concerns with the increased humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip. They're hoping for peace in Israel and Palestine. What do we see ahead, Professor Kim?
Altogether, I think this Israel problem, if you will, as a problem of world community, is one of the critical elements of bigger issue, bigger problem we would call the decline of the United States, right? The United States is facing this problem of having to deal with the Ukraine situation, where they cannot just sit there and then watch Ukraine being defeated by Russian aggression. When there is a different now opinion in Europe about how the world should continue to support Ukraine or not, and then inside the United States. So Ukraine is a huge headache, and then Taiwan situation is a huge headache going forward. This is a lot of people recognize Taiwan as a part of territory of China, but there's a big equal number of people saying this has to remain an independent state, upholding the principle of democracy and human rights. And so, China's intervention in Taiwan is cannot be tolerated, but how is United States is going to actually block it is a big question. So Ukraine, Taiwan, and now Israel here, by having to take stance with Israel, United States is weakening its position by itself. It's kind of shooting itself in the foot, and there's no other choice because of these people living in the United States, Jewish Americans and all that kind of stuff. So Israel question, together with Ukraine and Taiwan, are all adding to the problem of U.S. decline. And what's wrong with U.S. decline? Well, for Korea, one, as a country that has achieved this modernization and development based on the support from U.S.-led Western world, it's a problem for us. And, like how we stand and position ourselves in this turmoil is a huge question. And it's a problem that Europeans, Western Europeans also face as well. But this is a big issue, a challenge for all of us. And it's a reminder, the Israel issue is a reminder that this is common global challenge that we have to sort through, whether we like it or not.
Thank you so much, Professor Kim, for your insights. We appreciate it as always.
Thank you.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.